Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
I'm sorry, you can sit there and look and play with all your silly machines as much as you like.
Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
He's round the goalkeeper, he's done it! Absolutely incredible!
He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter who was without a shadow of a doubt giving him lip.
Oh, I say, it's amazing.
He does it tame and tame and tame again.
Crank up the music, charge your glass. This nation is going to dance all night.
Chanting the name of a sporting director, Martin Tyler going full pro Evo for seemingly no reason whatsoever, Mike Dean playing it dead straight in Ted Lasso, an epic, epic slice of Keys and Grey, the latest entry into the freak injuries pantheon, and some frankly incredible scenes at the 2021 Meat Management Industry Awards. Brought to your ears by The Athletic, this is Football Clichés. Right now you can subscribe to The Athletic for just £3.49 a month. That's 30% off the full price of the subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. So go to theathletic.com/clichéspod to take advantage of this special discount. That's theathletic.com/clichéspod. Hello everyone and welcome to episode 94 of the Football Clichés podcast. I'm Adam Hurry and with me, first of all, he's back after so long. It's Charlie Eccleshare. Hello.
Hi Adam, how you doing?
I'm all right. I would have planned so many warm words for your return after so many weeks away, but I will in fact leave it to Peter Drury instead.
Restored to this great gallery of the game, a walking work of art. Vintage, beyond valuation, beyond forgery or imitation. 18 years since that trembling teenager of touch and tease first tiptoed onto this storied stage. Now in his immaculate maturity, CR7 reunited.
Heartwarming stuff.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah, so many parallels. My couple of weeks on holiday and Ronaldo's long exodus. But yeah, either way, lovely to hear that and it's great to be back.
Yeah, really did your return justice. Alongside you, the equally valuable Nick Miller. How are you?
I'm all right. Delighted to be deemed equally valuable. That's put a real pep in my step.
Yeah, that is quite the praise. Straight away with a question here, Nottingham Forest fan Nick Miller. Are you rooted to the bottom of the Champo?
1 point from, was it 6 or 7 games? I think that's, I can't remember how many goals scored, but not many.
5, I can confirm.
Well, there you go. And lost all the other games apart from one draw. Yeah, I think that's firmly rooted, I think, isn't it?
I was going to ask if it was firmly rooted. I wasn't sure if you're allowed to be firmly rooted yet. You also didn't pick up on the fact that I said Champo for the first time in my entire life. That's what I wrote on the running order and I just said it. Is it okay to call it the Champo? I feel like it's worse than the Prem, which I actually quite like because players call it the Prem, Nick.
Yeah.
So that's all right.
I'm not sure. I mean, I do regularly call it the Champo and then sort of for a very small amount of time afterwards hate myself for it. So I think it's probably fine, but not ideal.
What do you think about the Prem, Charlie?
I think Prem is actually better than Champo. Champo sounds weirdly colloquial, whereas the Prem I think is a bit more acceptable.
Okay, I agree.
Do you know what I did on Saturday? I couldn't believe it. I said Premiership. I don't know what happened to me. It was like I'd sort of had every middle-aged man I've ever spoken to just inhabit my body. And instantly I was like, what have I said there? It was really, it's quite an alarming moment.
It is incredible how deeply Premiership has become embedded in people's brains, given that it was only actually called Premiership for, about 6 years or something like that?
I don't think anything has ever stuck as much as Premiership beyond the time at which it was actually called that. It's amazing. People who follow the Premier League quite closely still insist on calling it the Premiership.
You're absolutely right. I was having this exact conversation while watching an 11th tier football game this weekend. And my only theory was that Premier League football really hit the mainstream around about the turn of the millennium in terms of a kind of mass consumed product. So the name Premiership must have stuck with people who went on to not really pay much attention to it. So MPs and things like that, calling it the Premiership.
Yeah, I think that is it. I think it does. It captures a moment in time where so many people, that was their entry point.
Yeah, maybe. More pressing concerns for the adjudication panel today, I can assure you. We have so much to get through, and it is pure, pure gold. I want to start with you, though, Charlie Eccleshare, at Selhurst Park on Saturday. You tweeted, Fabio Paratici arrives and gives the Tottenham fans a wink as they sing his name. What the fuck? Why were they singing his name?
Well, this
what
is
the hell
quite...
is going on? I thought you would. I thought this was a big joke. I thought you would just.
No. This caused a lot of curiosity as to what the chant was. But I think this speaks to the growth of football transfer supremos as becoming these huge deals. I was talking to a former colleague of mine who covers Arsenal, and he said a couple of years ago, Raul Sanyehi stepped off the coach or whatever it was after that transfer window of 2019 where they'd signed a bunch of players and was mobbed by, you know, the fans were singing his name as if he was this huge star. Paratici in kind of Spurs fandom world was such a big talking point over the summer because there were lots of transfers and things like this. But yeah, to people asking, and I think I did answer this on Twitter, it was just a kind of dull thudding Fabio. Whereas there were some good suggestions over a kind of properly thought out Paratici song, but it wasn't quite that. Maybe that will happen depending on how the January transfer window goes.
I don't think he deserved a groupthink chant being created in his name, Nick. I mean, feel free to abstain on this question, Charlie. Mm. But Nick, are we okay with fans singing the name of a newly hired managing director of football?
I don't think so.
Very game's gone, even though it was just his name being repeated.
Where do you think this ranks in the game's gone scale with, was it outside Juventus a couple of years ago when fans were singing Mino Raiola's name?
I think it was after... below that.
Yeah.
I would put it above physios wearing predators. So it's somewhere in there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not, the game's gone more when Mino Raiola has been chanted.
Yes, I think so. Because there's no affiliation there.
Yeah.
I mean, even allowing for your favourite player. So, but okay, bit concerned, but I'm glad you addressed it.
I think it does speak, though, to this growing kind of obsession with not just transfers, but also like how transfers happen. And, you know, now the general level of awareness that fan has about, you know, the recruitment structure at a club, you know, it will genuinely be like a really, like people will get really furious about how, we don't have a director of football and all of this sort of thing in a way that I just don't think it existed or people didn't care as much or weren't aware of it as much 10, 20 years ago.
Mm, I completely agree.
Are we saying that there have simply been too many how the deal happened pieces written about it, so it's bled into the mainstream, and now the game's
eating the hand that feeds us away. More of that later.
To blame. Who wrote 3,000 words on the Fabio Paratici story earlier, I do have blood on my hands as they were singing Fabio.
This is from Leeds versus Liverpool on Sunday afternoon. Nick, Martin Tyler presumably has lost the rights to say Liverpool.
The route Salah's beaten him in terms of games by 13. Some express speed. They say a couple of them for Chelsea. And all the others for the Merseyside Reds.
Customary awkward silence after he says it. Nobody speaking for about 10 seconds.
Thiago.
Nick, my first question to you is, I can't think of a reason why it would be necessary to say that. It's not even a second mention situation. You would perhaps say the Anfield Club or something like that. But under what circumstances is Merseyside Reds either necessary or acceptable?
Well, I wonder whether this is a sort of like a very subtle, classy touch. Historically, of course, although we're informed by producer Dave that not anymore, Tyler was the voice of FIFA, whereas Merseyside Reds is a Pro Evolution Soccer thing. So maybe this is a little nod, or as now he's clearly been ousted from the FIFA gig, maybe it was maybe we've uncovered some beef here.
A cryptic lens of support.
It can't be a coincidence, can it, Charlie? But it's a very deliberate thing to say.
He's done this before, been pointed out. He's either a Merseyside Reds or one another. I mean, United for a while were called the Trad Bricks on Pro Evo. I don't think he's gone there. If he does, then we know he's up something.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
Like, to answer your question, like, the only way with Tyler, he's really into his alliteration at the moment, it seems like, more than anything, and sort of puns. So if he was saying, you know, it's mesmerizing for the Merseyside Reds or something, then, you know, even then it's a massive reach. We'd be like, okay, he really wants the alliteration. There, as you said, it is genuinely quite baffling, unless he did just feel he was saying the word Liverpool too much and wanted to vary it. But yeah, I mean, go Anfield outfit.
As always, we will never know, but if he does it again, I'm going to be right on top of it. Moving on, listener Jonathan Wilson writes in, always a good message that starts with these following words: I know you love player ratings. Well, going through old newspapers, and in 1964-65, and quite probably other seasons as well, The Sun ranked every player in a game from 1 to 22. Charlie, now I think about it, that's probably not a terrible way of doing it, is it?
Wait, so as in the best performing player to the worst?
Yeah,
that is quite a good idea. Yeah, I quite like that.
I'd never heard of that before. Mm. Nick, thumbs up from you?
Yeah, definitely. That's certainly more arbitrary than you know, marks out of 10, which, you know, as we all know, are pretty silly. By the way, assuming this is Jonathan Wilson, the football writer.
Oh, very much so. Yeah. Who else?
Him messaging you saying, I was going through newspaper reports from 1964 is one of the most Wilson things that is possible to say. Yeah, slightly disappointed that they were apparently English newspaper reports rather than, you know, Hungarian or something, but otherwise.
Yeah, that was a blow. But it did evolve. The chat evolved from there, Charlie, because he adds that the Mail that season gave each team a fair play rating, expressed as the percentage of outfielders on each team that they felt were playing the game fairly. What a ridiculous system that is! So to give you an example, tongue slightly in cheek from Wilson here, he says, the notorious Everton 0 Leeds 1 from 7th of November 1964. Scored a record low, Everton 20%, Leeds 25%. How can you even express it as a percent?
So is that to try and remove outliers? So if there's just one bad apple in the team, it doesn't affect you too much? Everyone down.
They seem to not include the goalkeepers, Nick, for no reason whatsoever.
They can't have bad sportsmanship.
I guess so.
But isn't this, like, this stuff is kind of, it's not a million miles away from where football media is now. Like, I can imagine, you know, here we rank everyone's performances from 1 to 22. Like, that feels quite now in some ways.
I don't always want to make it two football journalists unite on this podcast, Nick, but getting the player ratings gig for a match is generally regarded as being a fairly decent, easy afternoon. But if you were asked to rank each player out from 1 to 22, that suddenly becomes something of a chore, doesn't it?
Yes and no. I mean, it is in the journalist, it's one of those things that everyone moans about, but it is kind of objectively much easier, because the other thing is you write those and you send them in by like the 75th minute or something like that, so, you know, theoretically you're done by that point. But yeah, ranking will up your workload a little bit more.
Yeah, anything could happen to completely switch the order around. That must be so annoying. Someone scores a hat-trick in the last 5 minutes. So it's all going to go to pot. But fascinating stuff from the 60s. Bring all those back, definitely. Moving on, Mark Cosby, Charlie, writes in with an irritation. He says, quoting a player's age in years and days to demonstrate they are or are close to being the youngest or oldest to achieve a particular milestone. We talked about this on the podcast before. It's an awkward way of expressing it, but I kind of understand that there's no way out. But he gives a couple of pertinent weekend examples. First of all, Cristiano Ronaldo, 36 years, 218 days, is the oldest player to score a brace in a Premier League match since Graham Alexander for Burnley against Hull in April 2010. Don't need the days. I don't think you need the days. But, you know, a reasonably solid stat to use, so I kind of understand why. But he gives a following example. Trent Alexander-Arnold recorded his 35th Premier League assist today, aged 22 years and 340 days. In the competition's history, only Cesc Fabregas, Wayne Rooney and Ryan Giggs have reached this total at a younger age. 35th assist! this seems to me like the classic example, a genuine literal example of a record that a player didn't know about before the game until one of the lads mentioned it in the dressing room before kickoff.
Yeah, wasn't there that one last season, again related to Fabregas? I think it was, I can't remember who it was, maybe Smith Rowe or someone, had created the most chances in a Premier League Northerner derby under the age of 21 or something since Cesc Fabregas in 2007.
Brilliant.
But yeah, I mean, the days thing, I guess if another player in that was also 22 years, then it's a way of showing that slight difference. I always think with these, they start with the Trent one's interesting because it's different, but I always think you start with the 16 years, 42 days, like really impactful, and then dash, so-and-so becomes the youngest player to have done this.
Do you know what?
Since.
Niche complaint from me, but I don't like it when it's double figures in days. I always want it to be like triple figures. Gets you thinking, oh, what was he doing like a month earlier? Celebrating his birthday. Must be weird. But Nick, I mean, we are in a bit of a quandary here because, I mean, I understand that these things need to be separated. You know, the hierarchy needs to be established. But there's no elegant way of stating someone's age beyond their years.
No, I mean, presumably the Daily Mail in the 1960s would give it as a percentage. Like he is, he's 36 and 67% or something like that.
That would be good. That would be quite cool if we're doing it. Let it catch on. I bet they did it in the 60s. Yes, absolutely right. But Mark Cosby, we agree with you. It is all a nonsense, especially when attached to meandering stats. Popular culture here now, Charlie. We're all based opinion-dividing ex-ballroom dancing ace Mike Dean has appeared in season 2 of Ted Lasso, which I still haven't watched.
No, not me.
And I feel I may have unfairly maligned in the past. Everyone who watches it says it's really good. Would you like to hear his input?
Oh, it's a speaking role.
Oh, it's a speaking role.
Oh my god!
Sure.
Right, okay.
You may be underwhelmed.
Yeah. Hey, Red! Keep the shit out of your eyes, you dickless wonder.
Oh no! Never mess with Mike Dean. Can't say that, mate. I'm sorry. Here you go. Sorry about that, Mike. We all know you have beans. I've been called worse.
Pretty watered down, Charlie. Slightly disappointed by that.
Yeah, if you're going to get Mike Dean on, I mean, you could have got anyone. Could get in with that. We actually was going to message you. We yesterday at Sunday League we had the sort of Mike Dean of the Marshes. He's a kind of similar character, very quite performative in how he operates. So I was thinking about Mike Dean yesterday. But yeah, that does seem a bit of a waste of such a richly talented and versatile, as we know from his dancing performer.
Nick, do you think PGMOL had a word here? So we don't want him presented as some sort of caricature. Play it straight.
Maybe that's why he seemed sort of surprisingly wooden. I would have thought that Dean, even though with those kind of relatively few lines he'd given, would really ham it up a little bit. But but no, maybe he's been got at.
Yeah, disappointing. We need to see Mike Dean let off the leash in future episodes, please.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Perhaps the centrepiece of this episode, but who knows, because it's going to continue to get better, Charlie. This is pretty much just for you to herald your return. This is a bumper serving of Keys and Grey from the weekend. Just to introduce this, they're ploughing a well-trodden furrow here. A debate that presumably passed its sell-by date about a year ago, but that doesn't matter to Keys and Grey.
On the subject of Bielsa being a genius, what was he, the coach of the year last year or runner-up?
UEFA coach of the year, I'm sure he was.
On what basis?
No idea. No basis for me. I'm sorry. Taking Leeds to ninth, right, does not elevate you into coach, runner-up and coach of the year in European football. Tell me this. Where did Chris Wilder finish with Sheffield United?
Well,
ninth? Ninth. Why was he not even quoted? Why? That's a bigger job, taking Sheffield United to ninth, than it is taking Leeds to ninth. Right? So, I think that he comes with this aura. He comes with this reputation. Great coaches, Keezy, in my opinion, doesn't equate to being a great manager and winning titles.
No, hold on.
Right?
We're not talking great. The word that he's bandied about, very loosely, as I said, is genius. Mm-hmm. What qualifies him to be called a genius coach?
I don't know. I really don't, because all I've seen about of Bielsa is what he's done in England. Yes, great job getting Leeds up, but other people have done that.
Yeah. They play slightly differently. They want to go man for man where they can. I remember Steve Coppell taking a Reading team to Manchester United and going 20 years ago trying that. He didn't go down as a genius.
No. Listen, the guy has a career, and he's won. Did he win the Olympics or something like that with Argentina?
Yeah.
Right? 2004. Now, that's 17 years ago. You know, he's won bits and pieces. Has he won big stuff in Europe? Don't think so. Championship in England? That's it. This season, I think, we'll find more about Marcelo Bielsa this season than I think we've ever done. Because it's a season now where there are no surprises from Leeds. We all know how they play. Everybody in the Premier League knows exactly how they play. They were a bit of a surprise packet last year, but they've started not great.
I mean, there's so much to unpack.
I wanted to play the whole thing, and even then, that's an edited down version of the entire 2 minute 40 clip, because it ticks every box of the Bielsa debate.
Well, and also the general. You think this is a new idea? Steve Coppell was doing it 20 years ago.
That's what
always. I did not see it coming.
That's the best bit. No, nothing can ever be new because it's pressing. We were doing that in 1970.
Oh, it's so good.
If he'd said Sam Allardyce, if he'd said Harry Redknapp, that would have been too predictable. He's thrown in Coppell. It's very impressive.
Yeah, because I was thinking with like the full bingo, he'd get in about Brucey, his mate Steve Bruton, like, you know, why is Brucey getting a hard time?
This is perhaps my three favourite moments of it. The first of all was the classic interchange at the start where Keyes asks a question and Grace just goes, nope. No idea. Don't get it.
On what basis?
No idea.
The second one was the Olympics or something. Yeah. Which is so dismissive.
Did he win the Olympics or something like that with Argentina?
And bordering on celebrating the fact that he doesn't know, but just doesn't care. And then finally, saving the most insular bit to last is, we'll find out more this season about Bielsa than we've ever done. ever.
We'll find more about Marcelo Bielsa this season than I think we've ever done.
His entire career. Just sensational. I thought this debate was dead. I didn't think this was much of a talking point anymore, but it just... Everything was there, and I'm so happy we got to listen to it. Everything was perfect. I have no view on it myself whatsoever, Nick, but I'm delighted I got to hear about it.
And another highlight was when running down a list of things he's won were bits and pieces in Europe. What does that mean?
Bits and pieces.
Also, I mean, that preoccupation with silverware as well. But, like, this start, it is a mate, because he does position... Marcelo Bielsa, we're told, is a genius. The way he kind of presents bandied about. He's a genius, apparently. Also, I guess they've been waiting for this moment to punch him, because Leeds haven't started the season so brilliantly. So it's kind of been percolating there, I guess. They're like, right, now we can go on the Bielsa.
As always, with Keyes and Gray, I feel like we are slightly punching down intellectually. So I think in the interest of fairness, it's time to bite the hand that feeds properly. This is from last week on the on our flagship football podcast, the Athletic Football Podcast. Host Dan Bardell doing some self-policing when it comes to football cliches. I really enjoyed this.
The Premier League is back, but obviously there's been a fair bit of international football over the last 10 days or so. England fall to a late draw. Can you even fall to a late draw? But I guess the game was going to be won, stoppage time.
Nick, let's address the issue. Can you fall to a late draw?
No,
I mean, the circumstances lend itself very much to it.
I'm not sure you can fall to a draw. You can't really slump to a draw, can you? No, I don't think so. I mean, this is an indication of how we're influencing the game. You, Adam, are influencing the game.
That's how I see it.
people are just kind of with the looming spectre of the football cliches podcast in their head, wherever they go, whatever they say.
It's incredible. But I mean, Charlie, it's fine for us to sit here and point and laugh at people misusing the language of football. But what should he have said? I mean, what did happen to England? Were they pegged back? I don't think he could be. Is it pegged back?
Yeah, I mean, I guess they were pegged back, but
stunned.
I guess when he went with full, he was already in with the fall, like thinking, you know, fall, we fell to a late defeat or whatever. Fall to late. I think you can, or late. You can. Can you collapse? I know that wasn't a collapse. If you'd gone from 2-0, can you collapse to a late draw? No. They slumped to a late draw. It's not quite right.
Can you slip? slip to a
draw? I don't know if you can slip to a... No, I don't think you can. You can't slip to a draw. Mm. No. I mean, you just have to really rearrange the whole sentence.
Yeah,
it's like something like, yeah, they threw away, a
drop two win, points.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So my sympathies, but we were never going to let it lie. And but I'm happy, very happy to see that he picked himself up on it. Fantastic stuff. Moving on. This is from Greg O'Keefe's great piece at the weekend, Charlie, about managers who sign the same player over and over and over again. One example being Neil Warnock and Paddy Kenny. And this is a fantastic little anecdote from Kenny himself during his time at Sheffield United. He says, "But I remember the goalkeeping coach said I just needed one to hit me on the arse and go wide and I wouldn't look back. Sure enough, the next game their striker goes through on goal, one-on-one with me, and somehow I save his shot. I think it was with my arse, actually. That was that. My form came back." Two things here. Never heard of a goalkeeper being advised that just one needs to go off his arse and wide. And secondly, it works, so it's fine. Maybe they own it.
I was thinking about that going in off your arse and things turning around in relation to my watch. Now, this sounds bizarre. My watch just basically was like losing time, stopped working. I was like, I need to do something about it. And then all of a sudden, it's just started working again. And I was thinking it is almost like that thing of like, it just needed to get through a night, just one to go in off its arse, and now it's functioning.
I just thought you meant you rubbed it on your arse.
No. That would have been really weird.
Really weird.
It just got me thinking about, I was like, how has it suddenly turned its form around? I mean, it was broken, but yeah, just needed one to go in off its arse.
Exactly the same phenomenon. Nick, simple question, really. Are you happier with the idea of goalkeepers needing one to go off their arse rather than strikers?
It's kind of in my head that a goalkeeper would make a save with their arse or something like that more often than a striker would score a goal with his arse. I mean, it's pretty good.
Quite a useful place, quite a useful way to save a shot.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
Especially if you're Paddy Kenny.
It's understandable, but it is quite good how the arse has been deemed the ultimate body part for the inadvertent act of any description. Do you think that sort of midfield coaches say that he just needs to, you know, play a good pass off his arse or break up play with his arse or something like that?
I don't know.
I remember that, Nick. I think I tweeted something to that effect because there were ridiculous stories going around that Ozil was on an assist draft, which I'd never heard before. And I remember saying something like, he just needs to get an assist off his arse.
Oh, that would have been very clever.
Similarly, yeah. Claudio Bravo, I think I said something similar, went, do you remember? He went on the only ever save drought I've ever heard of before or since. He went something like six games and he couldn't make a save. And he did just need one to go wide off his arse.
I mean, after amid all the rubble of this, not a hugely great advert for the goalkeeping coach, I have to say. Just need one to go off your arse, you'll be fine, it's fine. But maybe that's how Warnock Sheffield United operated, I don't know. Classic cliche territory next, Nick Miller. Freak injury news from the Netherlands. Heerenveen's Swedish left-back Rami Kaib faces a spell on the sidelines after suffering which of these freak injuries? Nick, you're allowed the first guess. Is it A, broke his jaw while eating a carrot, B, tore ankle ligaments while walking in some clogs for a club photo shoot, or C, dropped the Man of the Match award on his toe and fractured it?
I don't know whether I'm being kind of, there's some kind of double bluff going on here, because I can't believe that you would make up the clog thing because it just seems so obvious. Okay, he dropped the Man of the Match award on his toe.
You're going for C, dropped the Man of the Match award on his toe. Charlie, that leaves you with A, broke his jaw while eating a carrot, or B, tore ankle ligaments while walking in some clogs for a club photo shoot.
I'll go B.
You're going for B. Well, you're both wrong because it was A, broke his jaw while eating a carrot in capital letters in the headline. In the pantheon of freak injuries, Charlie, at smack bang in the middle, that's perfect, isn't it? Breaking your jaw while eating a carrot.
That's pretty good. I do sometimes think of if I pick up a bottle. I know it was salad cream, wasn't it, that did for Dave Besson, but sometimes I will pick up a bottle of something like salad dressing.
If you're still buying glass bottles of salad cream, more fool you.
It's
squeezy all the way.
You can't be buying a bottle of salad cream now, but if I've got a bottle of salad dressing, I think of Dave Besson.
Before splashing on some aftershave before I go out, I just think, could I control this if I dropped it?
Probably not.
Nick, you may enjoy this. I don't actually know who this quote is from. I assume it's some sort of club insider. Kaib got a big knock on his jaw during a game a while ago. He just continued training and, of course, eating. Well, he ate a carrot and that carrot was quite hard. And then, crack, broken jaw, a carrot. Sensational delivery of the information there.
That's just
breaking your jaw. In my head, I was thinking, well, maybe it actually meant dislocating the jaw in case it was a particularly large carrot, and it, you know, it took a bit of a. But breaking your jaw, and I can't, oh my God, oh poor guy.
Well, I mean, we wish him well. Yeah, I think we all agree we wish him well, don't we, guys?
Yeah, and his
everyone here at the Football Cliches podcast would just like to send our best wishes,
thoughts and prayers, thoughts and prayers.
That does sound horrible.
To Remy Kaib, hope he makes a swift recovery from that one.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Well, luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Champions League action this week, Nick. Looking ahead to Tuesday night's fixtures, a quick fire one here. You'll take the first fixture. I want you to tell me which season pops into your head instantly when you hear this matchup. That's all I want. You can offer some brief logic if you like, but that's all I want. Nick, Barcelona, Bayern Munich.
Ooh, I don't know. I'm going to say sort of 2001. I'm thinking Giovanni Elbert. I'm thinking Patrick Kluivert for Barcelona.
Fine with me. Charlie, you get Dinamo Kiev and Benfica. I'm thinking 60s.
Oh, wow, you're going that far back.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it feels like it could be an epic. It could be like a Wilsonian 5,000-word long read on Kiev's... The epic two-legged tie with Benfica in 1967.
The problem for me is Kiev, I can't see beyond 98-99. They're just so that Shevchenko-Rebrov team for me. So I know Benfica maybe wouldn't have been around so much then, but that's what I can get. And I can't get that out of my head, I'm afraid.
Slightly regretting this segment already, but let's carry on. Nick, you get Young Boys versus Manchester United. More recent, perhaps.
No, that's like early stages, 2000, sort of 1993 to me.
Okay, yeah.
Possibly, it wasn't the game where Peter Schmeichel scored in, but it sounds like a game that Peter Schmeichel scored in.
Yep, sounds good. I like that. Charlie, you get Lille versus Wolfsburg.
Oh, that's like late noughties, I would say.
Yeah, it does sound a bit like the quarterfinal you don't watch.
Yeah. What was that era? Who did they have? Graffiti, wasn't he one of their great
Edin Dzeko, of course.
And Edin Dzeko, yeah.
Quite right. Nick, you can have Chelsea versus Zenit St. Petersburg to finish.
2007, I think. For some reason, the Chelsea player that pops into my head there is Alex, the Brazilian centre back.
Interesting, yeah.
Yes, thunderous free kick taking, dome headed Brazilian Alex. And to round this off, a segment we will never do again. Charlie Ecochet, you get Malmo versus Juventus.
Oh, wow. I mean, that does feel more retro. We're going back some there, aren't we, to when Malmo were a proper force. Not sure exactly when that was. Sometime in the distant past.
Okay, let's say late 70s. That was fun, wasn't it? Glad we did that. Just wanted to get some European flavour into the podcast. And if you thought that was all the fun, they're running out of content. Football Cliches podcast running out of steam this week, is it? No, we're not, actually. Because thanks to Stephen McClay, who alerted me to the fact that the 2021 Meat Management Industry Awards were hosted last week by Kevin Keegan. That alone is great. That collection of words alone are great. But there's more. To preview the event, Charlie, they had a little interview with Kevin Keegan on meatmanagement.com. And they said they were proud for him to host the awards, and they spoke to him about mastering the barbecue and the psychology of taking first place. Sounds interesting. I'm not going to go into this in great detail. I'm just simply going to give you the questions that they asked him. First of all, Kevin, what attracted you to hosting the Meat Management Industry Awards? What an opening gambit. Sensational. What did he say? Awards nights are such good fun because people are being selected and rewarded for what they've done that year. That's the Wikipedia page for awards night.
Yeah, that's fairly vague and general, Kevin.
So, good warm-up. Nick, this was the second question. What's your view of the UK meat industry's performance during the pandemic? it's coped very well with it. You keep hearing that there are going to be problems of reading things in the papers, that some supplies are going to be affected. But it seems the meat industry always survives, and sometimes you wonder how. It keeps reinventing itself. We're living in times when people are looking at meat and diet, and every industry is under scrutiny. But from what I gather, the meat industry has coped with the pandemic very well and seems to be coming out the other side even stronger. What an answer! Not phoning it in at all, properly cares about
it. Is that why he was doing it? I mean, does he... He seems like he does care.
Next question. Tell us about your favourite cut of meat. I'm a steak man, and I like to barbecue. If anyone has supported the meat industry this year, it's been my family. With the good weather, we had a run of about 5 barbecues in 6 days. I would say that steak is my favourite, but I like a lamb chop and a sausage on the barbecue. My God, they hired the best man. I genuinely thought he would half-ass this, Charlie, and he hasn't.
5 in 6 days is so good.
What a run!
I want to know on which day that run ended and with what. Like, guys, this is too much, isn't it? We can't have a barbecue again.
One sweet corn on the barbecue, just, that's it.
But there's something so joyous about this, because he could have easily said 5 in a week there, but no. Mm. He said 5 in 6 days.
Yeah, yeah. That's a goal scorer's logic. Yeah. Absolutely right. Okay, moving on, because I'm not letting this one slide.
We're about 1 and 2 for the year, barbecue-wise.
Good record at domestic level. Charlie, I'll invite you to guess some of the elements of his answer to this one. Have footballers' diets changed much since your playing days? Tell us about the things he's likely to have said in response.
Well, in my day, we'd have had a fry-up straight after a game and beers on the coach.
Well, yeah, you're reasonably right. He said back in the late 60s, early 70s, we used to have a steak before the match and sometimes chips. It suddenly changed in the 1970s as more foreign players came over. The pre-match meals had less meat before a game. Of course, I played in Germany and they were the same. You wouldn't eat meat directly before the match, except maybe a little chicken. It's more about pastas and foods like that before the game now. Ah, good to see chicken and pasta in there, Nick.
Pastas. Pastas, plural.
Yeah, your pastas. That's fine. You can pluralise pastas. That's okay. Yeah.
Your fusillis.
Your penne's.
So glad that me and Charlie went for the same pasta there. That is synergy if ever I saw it. What advice would you give those who don't win first prize in football or in life?
Oh, 95-96 all over.
Yeah, it's quite a poignant question for a man with a reputation as being a not quite their manager.
Brief football anecdote, and then just saying sometimes it's about very small margins, but at least you know if you can get that close, you are good enough. Quite right. So yeah, the whole thing just absolutely sensational, and by all accounts, a lovely evening was had by all.
That's really nice, because that first answer does suggest he really is just bullshitting and doesn't have a clue, and then he comes storming in with all that other stuff.
I was in absolute tears reading that earlier, and and was so again reading it out. Sensational end, or not quite end, the Football Clichés podcast, because Charlie, in celebration of your return to the Football Clichés podcast, I invite you to give me a number for the Premier
League playlist.
Bingo. You know the drill. I want a number between 1 and 1,379, and we will briefly talk about its potential significance in Premier League history.
389.
Well, you're going early.
Of course.
Nick was in the hundreds before, which is just silly. Well, I was 389. Summertime by the Sundays.
Nice.
I don't know it myself.
Oh, you know this song. I'm sure you know this. When you play it, you'll know this song.
I can't imagine what Premier League vibe this would be.
Okay, things are picking up.
Start of the season, perhaps?
Yeah, it's called Summertime, so I think start of the season.
But there was a sense of renewal at Leicester.
Oh,
welcome
very good.
New boys, Barnsley. To
oh,
Hilbert
you're
Street.
Too good at this.
And then, yeah, I think a kind of Steve Guppy, it's 3.
No, I think this is so leisurely. I would say there's no football action. This is all new signings. And
oh, you think it's one of those, and they're holding up the scarves and
yeah.
stuff?
I think Liverpool unveiled 3 new signings at Anfield as Gerard Houllier's.
It was a busy summer on Merseyside as Everton welcomed.
How can I out Premier League years, Charlie Ecclesiastes? It can't be done.
It might be a montage of people kind of going to the game, you know, mugging for the camera as they walk through the car park. Or
I think we're going to win. I think it's going to be 5-0. Can't wait for it, to be honest. I'm really looking forward to it. Like zooming in really dramatically on someone who's got the new signing's name on their back of their shirt.
Yeah.
But the optimism wouldn't last, as Andy Cole.
Sensational. Fantastic stuff. As I said, we are very much nearly at the end of this podcast, but not quite. Thanks very much to you, Nick, for joining us this week.
Thank you.
And Charlie, I would have warm words to mark the end of your reappearance on Football Clichés podcast, but again, I will leave it to Peter Drury. See you next time, everyone.
Close your eyes! And he never went away!
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.